This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 20th of March 2026. Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Barbara Kearns, and today I am accompanied in the studio by readers Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Nick Kearns.
Hello.
And Paul Newman.
Hello.
And the first thing to say is if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our free recordings, or if you have a problem with a recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. However, before reporting the playback box as faulty, please make sure it's plugged in and fully charged up. As you listen to the recording, don't forget that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes or back to a previous track if you want to listen to it again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header, and locate the recording you want to hear. Click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, with the most recent first on the list. Now let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle, starting with the news. Here are the headlines. Last plea over buses. Quadruple amputee set to row across North Atlantic, and Cathedral's new dean welcomed. And the first headline story, Daphne.
Thank you. And this is last plea over buses. Parents walk route in appeal to reverse cuts. Kingsworthy parents are making their last effort to save school bus services for their children. Parents, grandparents and councillors have been fighting plans by Hampshire County Council to cut buses running from the village to Henry Beaufort School, Hairstock. The council plans to end the service in April. On Mother's Day, mums joined forces to walk the alternative route proposed by HCC. The route involves crossing the junction of Springvale Road and Down Farm Lane, as well as walking on several unmade roads. Parents have warned that the route, which takes more than an hour, is unsafe. This walk occurred as 12 parents of Henry Beaufort pupils in Kingsworthy prepared to make a formal appeal to HCC on Friday, March the 20th, to stop the bus cuts. One of the parents, Amy Nichols, said that she had enjoyed the walk, but that safety concerns are still real. Councillor Jackie Porter, Lib Dem for Itchen Valley, was on the walk. She said, "I have continually challenged the county to review this route for safety in all weathers and lights. A portion of the walk is through muddy ground, and an even greater length is unlit or poorly lit. Crossing Springvale Road on the bend is dangerous. I am appalled that the Conservative County Council acknowledge concerns of the route, but won't commit to carrying out any of their suggested schemes to improve safety. And we are still unsure which part of the route will actually be available. I appeal to the County Council to think again." She also criticised the appeal process, saying that "the appeal process has been very badly run by Hampshire County Council, and a representative of the parents has already spoken to the local government ombudsman about their case. From a Freedom of Information request, the Conservative-run County Council tell us that this will save £300,000 per year if they stop these buses. But this decision will also affect the pockets of parents, adding to the cost of learning as well as the cost of living. MP for Winchester, Danny Chambers, has also become involved. He was due to present a petition in Parliament yesterday, signed by 500 parents, calling for the government to review the decision. He said, "This is a matter of deep concern for many families who have been tireless in their campaign to see this decision overturned. Under the current changes, children as young as 11 are expected to walk up to 3 miles over an hour on dangerous roads to get to school. The petitioners therefore request that the House of Commons urges the government to work with Hampshire County Council to ensure that the school bus service from Kingsworthy to Henry Beaufort School is continued." As previously reported, an independent report has been carried out on the alternative route, which has found it not to be safe. Children have also been warned that walking the route will not allow them to join in with after-school activities.
Quadruple amputee set to row across North Atlantic. Quadruple amputee Alex Lewis is preparing to take on one of the world's most extreme endurance challenges, to row across the North Atlantic Ocean from Newfoundland in Canada to Lymington in a Rannoch ocean-going rowing boat. Only 15 people in history have ever completed this perilous transatlantic route. Alex, from Stockbridge, will attempt the crossing with 9 other crew members to raise vital funds for Action for Limb Difference, supporting the development and production of affordable prosthetic limbs. Facing waves as high as houses, freezing temperatures, sleep deprivation, and potentially up to 2 months at sea, the challenge is widely regarded as one of the toughest ocean rows on the planet. Alex lost all 4 limbs following a severe illness, but has since become a powerful advocate for disability innovation, resilience, and possibility, often testing the future of assistive technology. This challenge is the real-world application of his years spent developing pioneering equipment, proving that with the right innovation, no environment is off limits. He said, "This row isn't about proving anything, it's about purpose. Every mile I row is about creating opportunity, independence and hope for people living with limb difference. Prosthetic change lives, but innovation needs funding, and that's why I'm rowing." Funds raised will directly support Action for Limb Difference, helping accelerate the design, development and availability of affordable prosthetic solutions that can transform independence, mobility and quality of life for people with limb difference. The North Atlantic crossing from Newfoundland to the UK is notorious for violent storms and unpredictable weather systems, sub-zero temperatures and icy seas, heavy shipping lanes, prolonged isolation and physical exhaustion. Rowing a Rannoch Adventure ocean rowing boat, Alex and his support team will be entirely self-sufficient for weeks at sea, navigating, eating, sleeping and rowing until landfall in Lymington. Back in 2012, Alex thought he had man flu, but collapsed and was rushed to hospital, where he was given just a 3% chance of survival. He had contracted strep A, followed by septicemia, which led him to having all 4 limbs amputated and facial reconstruction. Since then, the 45-year-old has gone on to achieve some remarkable feats and help various charities. And this piece is accompanied by a photograph of the quite remarkable Alex sat in his rowing boat on land, I hasten to say, with a big smile on his face. Good luck to him.
Mm. Cathedral's new dean welcomed. Winchester Cathedral was packed for a magnificent service on Sunday afternoon, March the 15th, for the installation of a new dean, the Reverend, very Reverend Chris Palmer, installed by the Bishop of Winchester, Philip Mount Stephen, and the Vice Interim Dean, Roland Ream. Esteemed guests such as the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Sudhakar Ashwal, the High Sheriff of Hampshire, Sue Elton, and the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Nigel Atkinson, came to mark this monumental event. Hundreds of church members and residents alike also attended. Dean Chris said, "I'm delighted and humbled to be entrusted with the role of Dean of Winchester, and I greatly look forward to getting to know the cathedral community, the diocese and wider society. Winchester Cathedral has the privilege of being a place that holds the hopes and aspirations of many, and to celebrate these through its worship, welcome and witness to Christ, and I am excited to play a part in this work. Please pray for me as I prepare for my ministry." Dean Chris joined Winchester from Exeter Cathedral, where he served as Canon Chancellor from 2018 and Canon Treasurer since 2022. He was also involved in the wider life of the city and the diocese, including theological education of clergy and ordinands. The Bishop of Winchester, Philip Mount Stephen, said, "I'm delighted that Canon Chris is joining us as our new dean. He brings a wealth of experience in both cathedral leadership and parish ministry, as well as a deep and lively faith in Jesus Christ. I very much look forward to welcoming him and Olivia to Winchester as the cathedral begins an exciting new chapter in its mission and ministry with his leadership." Alastair Acas, Director of Development for the cathedral, said, "It has been so joyous seeing so many people from various facets of the community, civic and volunteer, come together to celebrate this moment. The new dean's sermon said everything it needed to. There are so many people unsung, and the cathedral is about conserving and welcoming all facets of the community. It's rather like a family." Norman Digence, long-standing member of the cathedral congregation, said, "It was splendid. This is what we do well, the music, magnificent singing, and the overall ceremony of the occasion. It's a majestic building. Dean Chris made a very good impression today, and the service was included in Evensong, which was very well constructed. Music before the service was sung by the cathedral choir, conducted by Andrew Lucas, interim director of music, and the organ was played by both Oliver Morrell and Joshua Stevens. This appointment signals the beginning of a new era for Winchester Cathedral and follows its 900-year history. The public can catch up with the full installation service on Winchester's YouTube channel."
Thank you. That concludes the headline stories. I'll go on now with the death notices, and Daphne will follow with Christian comment. Here are the death notices. Kaplan Michael John passed away at Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 25th of February 2026. Crawley Elizabeth, known as Beth, passed away peacefully on the 25th of February 2026, aged 91 years. Hobbs Joy, on Monday, the 2nd of March 2026, at her home. Leebrook Claire passed away on the 28th of February 2026, aged 58 years. Linton Anne Margaret Annie passed away peacefully at Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 27th of February 2026, aged 70 years. Solahab Valerie née Drew, on the 2nd of March 2026. She died peacefully at home, aged 89. Viney, Irene Anne, known as Anne. On the 7th of March 2026, at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 91 years. Christian comment has been written by the Reverend Philip Crinks this week. He writes about coming back to God. Thank you, Daphne.
World events may set us wondering about human nature in a rather despairing way, but the Christian story is one of hope. At the start of our story, Adam and Eve live in Eden in complete harmony with God and the rest of creation. They are placed there to cultivate and till the land. Their work is a totally joyful collaboration with God in perfecting his creation. No conflict, no suffering, no death. But this harmony is shattered. The tempter, with his seductive voice, which the writer of Genesis pictures as a snake, suggests to Eve that she eats the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. That is a powerful temptation. To resist it would involve humility. It would mean accepting that we are creatures and less than our Creator. It would mean accepting that there is a moral order in creation, which we are to obey, symbolised by the simple command not to eat that fruit. It is not only Eve and Adam who fail to manage this. We all fall to the temptation to go for more. Call this ego, pride, or hubris. Rather than trusting God and having faith in him, we prefer the idea of being little gods ourselves. God gives humanity the freedom to make that choice. But because we make it, we can no longer live in Eden. So Adam and Eve have to leave Eden and head out into the rest of the world. Their work is not totally joyful. There are snakes and wasps and viruses and landslides which threaten human life. There, conflict between human beings becomes rife and destructive, as first seen in the story of Cain and Abel. All this comes from the distance which our choices have created between us and God. But of course, all is not lost. In a few human beings, God finds real faith and preparedness to trust and to obey him. Most importantly, with Abraham and his descendants, God makes a covenant. He gives them the law and the prophets so that they can begin to live again in harmony with him. And it is from these descendants that God raises up Jesus, his son, born under the law, to make atonement, a bringing back together of humanity to God. We cannot change human nature any more than we can put the clock back and undo what Eve and Adam did. We cannot recover that state of perfection where all of humanity lived in complete harmony with God and the rest of creation. But we do have a way back to God. As John's Gospel says, the divine light has now come into the world. And to as many as receive him, that believe on his name, to us he gives power through faith to become children of God, as we are born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of him. And that, of course, from the Reverend Philip Crinks.
Thank you. Now, this week's letters to the editor, which we haven't been missing 11 this week. Nick, can you start us off with Bogeyman, please?
Yes, and this one comes from Chris Gillam. In my ward of St Paul's City Council election and the division of Westgate County election, I keep getting Lib Dem propaganda sheets which make ludicrous statistical statements. The latest asserts that Labour and the Greens are out of the race in our area, adding up by-election wins in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight in 2025 as Lib Dem 7, Reform 3, Independent 2, Conservative 1 and Greens 1. The ridiculous message we are supposed to take from this spurious statistic is that the battle in local elections in May is solely between the Lib Dems and Reform. The Lib Dems routinely play this absurd tactical voting game rather than put themselves up against their rivals in honest policy terms. They did it in Twyford and Coldon Common last year, stating that the Lib Dems were running at 62%, Conservatives at 28%, Greens at 7% and Labour at 4%, and stating voting for Labour or Green Party helps the Conservatives win. The Greens won that seat with 42% to the Lib Dems' 28%. It is a common observation now that the electoral map in prospect has changed fundamentally. Locally, there is no evidence that Reform is a significant factor in the Winchester area, or ever was in its UKIP incarnation, even at the time of the Brexit referendum. The latest YouGov national poll, March the 10th, has the Green Party equal second, 4 percentage points behind Reform and 5% up on the Lib Dems. So, if there were any reality in the Reform threat, it is likely that the Greens are a better bet for defeating it than the Lib Dems. Tactical voting in such circumstances is inherently dangerous and tells us nothing about the desires of the population. Far better to vote for the candidates and the policies you believe in. The clear message that came from Green's Hannah Spencer at the Gorton and Denton by-election was that of hope and possibility of change. Positivity, not the relentless negativity of the far right or the dishonest appeal to the fear of the bogeymen that characterises the Lib Dems. Oh, that letter comes from Chris Gillam, Upper High Street, Winchester.
Bus station will make access harder. This is from Mike Nell, who writes from Sutton Scotney. You recently reported that the latest Central Winchester regeneration plan includes plans for the closure of the bus station. The assertion reported is that a lighting and awaiting passengers will be moved to the Broadway and Silver Hill. The bus station is very busy with passengers at peak times in volumes that would cause dangerous congestion if relocated. At a time when more enlightened councils are looking to implement transport hubs, the proposal to remove a central bus station removes the one thing that makes it easy to use public transport in Winchester and replaces it with connectivity challenges. Removes passenger waiting facilities like seating and information boards, and introduces major challenges for disabled passengers. The only foreseeable solutions to dangerous and difficult to use waiting areas on the Broadway or Silver Hill are investment in waiting infrastructure at those locations, or replacing the bus station with a multimodal transport hub, as could easily be achieved as part of the current station approach development. You don't regenerate a city by making it harder to access. We need political leaders who want to make Winchester more attractive to residents and visitors, not lining the pockets of developers and unregulated private bus companies. Mike Nell, Sutton Scotney.
And this letter comes from Simon Lever. I read with great concern the proposed plans for closing Winchester bus station to accommodate other plans, Chronicle March the 12th. The bus station is critically important as a hub for travelling around Hampshire and beyond, being critically important for the Winchester region. The service provided by excellent drivers cannot be taken for granted. Centrally located, the bus station facilitates Southampton and Park and Ride, plus the large number of other services covering a wide area delivered by stagecoach. I am a regular, almost daily passenger. This central location for all services cannot possibly be closed. Many elderly and disabled passengers rely on central access. I can only imagine individuals behind the proposed plans for closing the bus station never rely on buses. I sincerely hope common sense will prevail. And that's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
And the next letter shows a different viewpoint. Silver Hill, the debate resumes. I attended Jigsaw's public consultation event on March the 2nd in the nutshell, updating all who wished to attend on the latest iteration and the proposals for the long-awaited revitalisation of these key sites in our city centre. I left feeling uplifted and optimistic, having spent time studying and discussing the model and drawings with the design team and with Winchester City councillors. Optimistic that at last we shall see a redevelopment appropriate in scale, with due regard given to environmental improvements, high quality public realm, and a generous proportion of tenancy blind social housing. I'm therefore surprised and disappointed by the Cron's negative take with your headline, "No plans for bus station at Silver Hill," Chronicle March the 12th. An overall vision document for the entirety of Winchester is certainly desirable, and many have campaigned for this. But we should not allow the best to become the enemy of the good, because some issues out with the boundaries of this particular site remain unresolved. And that letter comes from Kate McIntosh, MBA, RIBA, Honorary F. Friars, West End Terrace, Winchester.
Yes. The second, this letter is from Tony Gaster on the same subject, but a little more concise and not quite as propositional. Much has been said about Silver Hill. Oh no, now a change of name. Chronicle, March the 12th. Lots of money spent on fees, hours of meetings, but action, not much of that. Friar's Gate was demolished, and we might have hoped for some homes, instead a stupid garden. Now we have Bushfield Camp to contend with, a plan to extend our small city of Winchester and increase traffic beyond belief. At least we have an election coming to make our feelings known. That's from Tony Gaster of Old Kennels Lane, Oliver's Battery, but it is supplemented by a letter editor's note. The stupid garden referred to was only ever a meanwhile use. And rightly or wrongly, Bushfield Camp has been earmarked for development since its inclusion in the local plan some 15 years ago.
Now, Ian Tate writes, many of your readers will remember with much affection the late Chris Webb, who died in September 2015. Chris lived in an exquisite 18th century home, Churnock Place, in Southgate Street, and Chris was tremendously proud of this property. I was lucky enough to have a guided tour, and it was quite fascinating, partly because Chris was an avid collector of books, railway items, and many other things, but also the sheer beauty of the house. As covered by the Hampshire Chronicle at the time, Chris left Churnock Place to the Landmark Trust, a charity who specialise in looking after important buildings. Sadly, the Trust have done absolutely nothing with the property, other than to eventually sell it for just over £1 million in 2023. Due to their lack of care, water leaked into the top floors, damaging the coving and plasterwork, and the property remains in a very sad state. Chris was a true champion of all things Winchester and was a mine of local information, and I think that he would be turning in his grave over the appalling neglect the Landmark Trust has shown to his important home. And that's from Ian Tate, Romsey Road, Winchester.
And the next letter comes from Kim Gottlieb. I'm sure the whole district is looking forward to the local elections in May. At least they've not been cancelled, thank goodness. Literature is already pouring its way via the letterbox and, after a pause, into the recycling bin. In that pause, I've noticed that various criticisms are being made of the current administration's handling of the Central Winchester regeneration area and Jigsaw's latest proposals for the same. These proposals have been some time coming and may not be to everyone's taste, but for certain they are infinitely superior to those for which planning permission was given in 2006 and 2014. From what I've seen and heard so far, my personal view is that the Jigsaw scheme will be a success and provide a new, predominantly residential area that will complement and support the rest of the city centre. But, for various reasons, the development environment continues to be challenging, and it would be an awful shame, a travesty even, if the proposals were to be somehow tripped up because they had become the subject of political battling. In truth, both the main parties had a hand in the bad stuff. At this delicate juncture, how much better would it be if the main political parties didn't do politics and just celebrated together as things move forward and take actual shape? There's plenty else to provide for political ding-dongs. Just not Silver Hill, please. From Kim A. Gottlieb, Winchester.
This is back to the roads. Entitled Worst Roads, it comes from Joss Creese of Rareridge Lane, Bishop's Waltham. I was interested to read the article by the leader of Hampshire County Council, Councillor Nick Adams-King, admitting that there is not being enough money anymore to maintain our road network. I welcome the honesty, but for at least the last two decades, the Tory-run council has strived to get council tax as low as possible. From 2010 and the era of austerity, they cut budgets, staff and reserves. They were aided and abetted in this destruction by their Conservative Party bosses in Whitehall, who cut local government spending more than any other part of the public sector, resulting in all of the problems that Councillor Adams-King describes. Today, as a result, our local public services are in a parlous state. Nowhere is this more visible to the public than in the number of potholes, but these visible holes are just symptomatic of a wider malaise caused by poor planning and deliberate starvation of services. He describes the fact that council tax is lower in Hampshire than it is in Surrey and Oxfordshire, and that we have benefited from this. But he fails to acknowledge that this is exactly the cause of the problems that we face today. In my view, the past political ambitions of Conservatives in Hampshire and their bosses in Whitehall to drive down council tax and cut budgets have created the challenges we have locally today. This includes a failing road network, where the economic and social costs, let alone the massive remedial costs, dwarf what it would have cost to maintain roads properly over the past 15 years. We now seem to have one of the worst road networks in Europe, with little hope of this being fixed any time soon. The job of local and central government is to maintain a good quality of public services underpinned by a strong financial basis with taxes built for the long term. It should not have been to pander to narrow and short-term popularity stakes and hope for the best. Joe Creese, Bishopsworth.
Now, Carol Orchard writes, like other correspondents, I can't see the logic of Hampshire County Council's livable neighbourhood proposals for full flood, Chronicle, March the 5th. Agreed, residents collectively own more cars than there are garages for, but drivers are well able to navigate its streets if they are polite and patient, as most are. And best avoid its school roads on weekdays at around 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. during term time. Rat runs are inevitable in towns whose main roads can't cope with the amount of traffic wishing to use them. As Mr. Schofield points out, let us march the 5th, closing off a rat run simply means drivers find an alternative nearby, for example, West End Terrace instead of Clifton Terrace. Please don't impose one-way streets on us. Full Flood is an eminently livable neighbourhood now. These proposals will make it less so. There must be better ways of spending our money. De-cancelling bus routes and or mending potholes spring to mind. And that's from Carol Orchard, Northview, Orams Arbour, Winchester.
Mark Rowe writes from Taplings Close in Wick. As you and my fellow readers may know, I follow Winchester City Football Club. This Saturday they are at home to Lark Hall Athletic, who are 9th in the league, with Winchester 4th and pushing for promotion. If you would like to watch your local football, come along and you will see how clubs like Winchester are part of the community and football family. Before the game, have a pint, even a meal, or use the club shop. You meet a mixture of fans, from ones that have been going to matches for years to new fans who all enjoy the beautiful game. Going to matches has helped me loads with my confidence and more. I get to meet fans and forge new friendships. At Winchester City games, you get to meet the players and the board, plus many others. After games, you meet the players from both sides as they come off the pitch. Give non-league football a try. Who knows? You'll become a long-term fan like myself, who has been at the club for around 5 years. Football brings people together, and I look forward to seeing both sets of fans on Saturday. Hopefully a great game and 3 points. Mark Rowe, Taplings Close, Week.
And John Hunt writes about Easter crosses. Repaving stones in Winchester. Well done, Winchester City Council, with Easter celebrations almost upon us. It's lovely to see the preparations being made in the shops, especially the hot cross buns, in various flavours in different shops. It's good to see WCC getting involved by putting white crosses on the paving slabs in different areas around the city. And that's from John Hunt of Water Lane in Winchester.
Lovely. If you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860836, or you can email news at hampshirechronicle, all one word, .co.uk, or you could write an old style letter to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We will continue now with the editorial comment, first person, and Belgarum. Now, the editor heads up her article this week with The Task of Getting Kids to School Safely. Thank you, Paul.
The debate over school transport for pupils at Henry Beaufort in Winchester may seem a small matter on paper. A few miles, a bus route, a council cost-cutting exercise. But for families in Kingsworthy, it is anything but. The proposal to withdraw dedicated bus services for children living within 3 miles of the school exposes the thin line between policy and practicality. Technically, 3 miles is the legal threshold for free transport. But in reality, those miles cut across narrow roads, muddy ground, and at times treacherous weather, hardly a safe, simple walk. Parents in Kingsworthy know too well that the route to Henry Beaufort is far from straightforward. It involves sections with no proper footpath and traffic that roars past school children commuting on foot or bicycle. Removing the bus may save some money, but it shifts the burden in stress safety and logistics directly onto families. There is, of course, the wider picture. Hampshire County Council faces deep financial pressures, and school transport has long been in the firing line. Yet such decisions should be about more than balancing spreadsheets. They should reflect our duty to ensure that children can get to school without unnecessary risk. Pragmatism and compassion can coexist. Perhaps the solution lies in a shared transport scheme, a scaled-back service, or reconsidering the route's safety assessment. What matters most is that decisions are rooted not only in law, but in lived experience. For the parents of Kingsworthy, 3 miles may be a statistic. For their children, it's the daily journey to an education they deserve to reach safely. Thank you.
Right. In first person this week, Yinan Ezra writes about At Last an End to Endless Rain. Here's Daphne.
It seems to have stopped raining, but am I dreaming? But I have been able to get on in the garden, do a few bits here and there, including, dare I say it, some planting. On the odd occasion, the sun has come out. Plants everywhere are beginning to explode. The blossoms seem early, but lovely to see. They're confetti-like petals dusting the vehicles around. Elsewhere, the primroses and daffodils of many a yellow greet us. It's all coming alive after weeks of rain and dreary skies. It's lovely to see, as it's a real break in what has seemed like 40 days and 40 nights of relentless rain and murk. On Mother's Day, we went early to Hillier's for a walk. The wonderful early spring flowers, including the magnolias, were bursting out, some yet to do so. The sunshine mixing with the colours was beautiful, although the wind was a little cutting. But it was wonderful to see so many of all ages, some really small, all taking in the emerging spring. Does it all seem a bit premature? We could get frosts with even more rain and strong winds. But the short break gives us feelings of relief and pleasure. Or am I tempting fate? Are we in for more unwelcome change? I suppose the weather seems only to reflect the confusion all around us. Nothing seems to be steady, both at home or overseas. Pictures fill our TV screens of smoke plumes in far-off lands, including pictures of various world leaders pronouncing. Then some expert gives us an explanation of what apparently is happening. All this is now covered 24 hours a day in graphic cinema scope with hours of analysis. Does all this talk make us a little immune to the fact that inside the screen there is real tragedy? This endless chatter, although well-meaning, seems to blur this. The newspapers, too, are full of the current conflict. Sometimes when I look at the choice of printed matter outside the village shop, I wonder if we all live in the same country. The headlines are all pressing a message, some screaming for action, others urging caution. Only a few point out the human cost of the conflict. We seem to get to this point a little too often. A choice between scrambling the latest technology to use, which, although sometimes accurate, can get things tragically wrong, or to continue talking, however frustrating that may be. Why is it that we are here again? The several years of heartbreaking activity just continue, with the world's media all competing for the best view. The sunshine while walking distracts. The birds seem to be happy, their songs uplift the heart. The weeds are already emerging in the veg patch, so nature's unique cycle is well on its way. Maybe it's time to sort them, as the potatoes need to go in. The plug plants have arrived and need to go into the greenhouse. The numerous spring jobs all need doing. A dusk walk to a village hall meeting provides an opportunity for quiet reflection. Yes, the current noise both at home and abroad is distressing, with no end in sight. However, the owls are noisy, the evening light mysterious, quiet and full of spring colour. Dog walkers pass with a polite greeting. The hum of the brook in the background seems reassuring. This is also a reality. Our little world of calm, at least for now, quieting the heart.
And Belgarum has a couple of little pieces for us this week. Tell us, Nick.
Yes, the first bit is about Barber's Darts Challenge. A barber shop has reopened with a new Pay What You Throw dartboard challenge. Regime Barbers, located on St George's Street in Winchester, had planned to reopen on January the 19th, following 2 weeks of fireproofing and safety improvements. Plans were delayed, however, when asbestos tiles were found above the shop's suspended ceiling, extending the closure until mid-February. Pete Down, director of Regime Barbers, said, "As part of the reopening, we've introduced a fun new gimmick that we thought might be of interest. A dartboard challenge where customers throw three darts and pay what they throw. It's been hugely popular so far. One of our Instagram posts has nearly 2,000 likes and over 300k views already. We've also had air conditioning installed throughout the shop, ready for what's hopefully a hot summer, so customers will be very happy about that. The shop has also welcomed a new member to the team." Mr. Down said, "We've also got some great news for locals. Rob Phillips has recently joined our team from another well-known barber shop in Winchester, Chaps. He's been cutting hair locally for years, and we'd love for his loyal clients to be able to find him here at Regime."
No, my luck, I would score a 180.
And the second piece is entitled Wild West Style Care Home Fun. Care home residents slipped on their jeans for a good cause. Homes across the South backed Denim for Dementia Day, the National Alzheimer's Society campaign designed to raise money and awareness to help those living with dementia, with Colton Care among those taking part. Brookview in West Moors hosted a Wild West themed party, complete with Stetson hats, bandanas and a chance to lasso a cow. At St Catherine's View, another Colton Care home in Winchester, residents and staff stage a catwalk display featuring homemade denim costumes and accessories.
Thank you. Now let's have a little look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. On Monday the 23rd of March, the big Royal General Knowledge Quiz. This is a great big quiz at the Theatre Royal. It's at 7 o'clock. And entry is £4. Also at the Theatre Royal on the 26th of March, that's a Thursday, Cara Dillon, lovely folk singer. She's coming home, she says, is her tour name. And she's at the Theatre Royal at 7:30. Something slightly different at Winchester Cathedral. You've got Elgar's Dream of Gerontius. That's on Friday the 27th of March, and that's 7:30, and tickets are between £15 and £50. There's a sitar and tabla concert, 7 p.m. at St Paul's Church, St Paul's Hill in Winchester. Tickets are £15, and that's on Saturday the 28th of March. And on Sunday the 29th of March, There's Join Voices for Hospices Choir for favourite songs from Oliver. This is raising money for our hospices. It starts at 10:30 a.m. and tickets are £15. And if you enjoy singing, you could raise money for a worthy and necessary charity at the same time. Right. And now here are the lighting up times. On Saturday the 21st of March, the sun will set at 6:19 p.m. And on Wednesday the 25th of March, the sun will rise at 5:58 a.m. and will set at 6:26 p.m. And now on to items of general news. Daphne, would you like to kick us off, please?
Yes. Now, this item is headed up Chuffed to Bits, Bookshop Best in South East. A landmark bookshop in Winchester has been crowned the best in the South East. P&G Wells on College Street, regarded as one of the oldest continually operating bookshops in Britain, was crowned Regional Bookshop of the Year for South East England as part of the 2026 British Book Awards. The accolade celebrates the best in independent bookselling, with 9 shops across the UK and Ireland recognised for their contributions to readers and communities. Books curator and custodian of P&G Wells, Steve Sholey, said, "We are chuffed to bits. We have so many people telling us that we are the best bookshop in Hampshire and have won various awards for that in the past. To be selected as the best in the South East is very pleasing and a great recognition of all the hard work from our team. There are lots of exciting events going forward. The next big one is the Winchester Books Festival, which we are heavily promoting. We're always looking to improve what we offer, to give new and exciting things to the book club community. Thinking further ahead, we're really looking forward to our 300-year anniversary in 2029. When I took on this role, I said I would get it through to the big anniversary and eventually hand it over to the next custodian." Tom Tivnan, deputy editor of The Bookseller, said, "It is a broad tent of shops that run the gamut from one of the oldest continually running stores. There has been a bookshop in Winchester's P&G Wells premises for just under 300 years, to relative newcomers like London's Backstory. The awards, sponsored by Gardeners, honour independent bookshops that bring energy, innovation, entrepreneurship, and who are described as being both digitally savvy and customer-focused. P&G Wells in Winchester has operated in the 18th century and has celebrated various milestones over the year, including the 250th anniversary of the birth of Jane Austen, who lived just down the street, although not for very long. Today, the shop organises a busy schedule of events and takes part in festivals and school partnerships. There were other winners recognised across the UK. The winner will receive a £5,000 prize from Gardeners and will also be entered into the running for Book Retailer of the Year."
Twinning deal signed with Ukrainian city. A new twinning agreement has been signed to strengthen international ties and promote peace. Winchester District has officially partnered with Nizhyn, an historic city in Ukraine, and that's spelled N-I-Z-H-Y-N. The agreement was signed on Friday, March the 6th, during a ceremony at Abbey House by the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Sudhakar Ackwell, alongside city councillors and representatives from the Winchester Ukrainian Cultural Association. Councillor Ackwell said, "The Winchester district has a strong and special connection with Ukraine. A significant number of Ukrainian refugees currently call the district home, and they are active, valued members of our local community. This new twinning agreement will further foster and develop the close ties and mutual understanding between the twinning associations and residents of the cities of Winchester and Nijin, strengthening community connections, supporting exchange, promoting environmental responsibility, and advocating for the right of every person to live in peace and security. Nijin, sitting along the Oster River, has a population of around 72,000 and is known for its rich heritage, including more than 300 historic buildings. Its university, founded in 1805, is one of the oldest in Ukraine. During the signing, the mayor of Winchester and Oleksandr Kodola, mayor of Nijin, met online to sign the agreement simultaneously. Winchester City Council has an ongoing commitment to welcoming Ukrainians seeking a safe place due to the current crisis in the country.
Paul, over to you now.
Mentally draining escape from Dubai. An elderly Hampshire couple told of their mentally draining escape from Dubai after being stranded for over a week due to the ongoing conflict. Anne and Ron Upfield, 81 and 86 respectively, who live on the edge of Swanmore, were visiting Dubai for a week's break and some sunshine, but Iran began firing missiles at the Gulf states. The couple were originally due back on Sunday, March the 1st, but did not make it home until Tuesday, March the 10th. They were stranded in Dubai after attacks began on what was supposed to be the last day of their holiday, and British Airways could not fly them home. They had to hide in the hotel basement because of the interceptions going on. Anne said, "It wasn't physically straining, but mentally straining. You start worrying about all the noises. You could hear everything." They were told the only way they could get home was by a coach ride across borders to the airport in Muscat, Oman. It ended up taking them 9 hours. The couple had to take a taxi at 7:30 a.m. to the Fairmont Hotel in Dubai, which had been struck by a missile, to get on the coach. She said, "You couldn't write a book about this." She said the coach drove 2.5 hours to a shopping mall and they had to change vehicles as the coach from Dubai was not allowed across the border. At the border, they had to pay to exit the United Arab Emirates, and the men and women were divided into two groups to do a spot check on 3 suitcases for each gender. She said they offloaded the suitcases and ordered people to open them. I think they were checking for alcohol. Anyway, they arrived at the airport at 4:30 p.m. but were not allowed in because there were more than 8 hours before their flight. So they were allowed into the airport only 2 hours later, but only if they had a ticket, but then had to wait until 11:30 p.m. for the check-in to open. We were just sitting around and waiting for hours. Once on the flight, Anne said, "I was nervous about flying over Saudi because of the missiles." But she added, "It was all worth it once they got home. It was just wonderful when the plane landed. Everyone clapped and cheered."
Hampshire to have 2 major solar farm projects. Solar energy projects are coming to Hampshire. 2 major solar farms near Andover and Winchester are set to bolster Hampshire's role in the UK's switch to cleaner energy after securing government-backed support and local planning consent. Lane's Farm near Andover and South Lynch Farm to the west of Winchester have both been awarded long-term inflation-linked contracts for difference under Allocation Round 7A, giving the scheme's revenue certainty and paving the way for construction as early as 2027, subject to a final investment decision. A Uniper spokesperson said, "We're proud to be investing in Hampshire's low-carbon future. These solar farms will help deliver affordable, sustainable energy for thousands of local households." Lane's farm has permission from Test Valley Borough Council and is designed to generate up to 24.38 megawatts of renewable electricity, enough to power around 10,000 homes each year. South Lynch Farm, approved by Winchester City Council, has a potential capacity of 20.31 megawatts supply, supplying the equivalent of about 8,500 homes. Both schemes were originally brought forward by renewables developer Innova before being acquired by energy company Uniper as part of a wider solar portfolio. The developer said the Winchester project will deliver significant biodiversity gains on former agricultural land with enhanced habitats, strengthened hedgerows, and funding for local community initiatives.
Police clamp down on threat of rural crime. Police are clamping down on rural crime with targeted checks for stolen farm equipment. Officers in Hampshire have been inspecting vehicles transporting agricultural and plant machinery as part of a proactive operation to identify stolen goods. This comes amid rising concerns over organised crime targeting rural communities by moving high-value equipment across the country and overseas. Sergeant Kevin Pearson from Hampshire Constabulary's Country Watch Rural Crime Task Force said, "As part of this operation, police have been specifically targeting lightweight commercial vehicles, anything that is towing something or is articulated, and anything which is loaded. We're checking their loads and the conditions, and we're checking the plant machinery that is on them." A representative from DataTag has been working with us, who is checking the machinery against the national databases for stolen plant. So we're making sure that we achieve our due diligence with regards to anything passing through here or anything suspicious. The issue isn't one that's just restricted to Hampshire, it's a national issue. Farm machinery and plant theft is a particular problem for our rural communities. Our farms are continually targeted by criminality, and a lot of this equipment is difficult to trace, but easy for criminals to transport. The checks were carried out on March the 12th at the DVSA site off the M3 in Chilcombe, led by Country Watch Rural Crime Task Force with support from the Roads Policing Unit. No stolen items were found during the checks, but two arrests were made at the Chilcombe site. One man was arrested on suspicion of drunk driving, while another was arrested for an outstanding warrant. Several drivers were also fined for carrying overweight loads. In the last 9 months, the Country Watch Rural Crime Task Force has recovered hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of stolen goods and vehicles, much of which has been returned to its rightful owner. Police are urging the public to continue reporting suspicious activity in rural areas to help tackle these crimes. Reports can be made by calling 101 or visiting the Hampshire Police website.
The following item concerns a name which will be familiar to long-term readers of the Chronicle. He was a frequent correspondent. I'll give you his name, Andrew Rutter, and he's an outstanding citizen of Winchester, though hailed from Shaftesbury. Andrew Rutter is a lifelong Quaker, and this concerns some of his artwork. More than 400 original drawings capturing decades of architectural history have been donated to the Hampshire Record Office. The works, which were created and donated by Andrew Rutter, the City Council's first conservation officer, depict Winchester and its surrounding areas. The collection spans nearly 50 years, covering 1972 to the 2020s, and includes rare perspectives from upper floors, private locations, and features such as historic fireplaces. It is a unique historical archive created by Mr. Rutter, who is now in his 90s. Keith Lehman, former chairman of the City of Winchester Trust, said, "This is such a unique and valuable collection that Winchester is fortunate to be the guardian of for the future." The artwork was officially handed over on Friday, March the 6th, during an informal presentation at the Hampshire Record Office on Sussex Street. Although Andrew Rutter was unable to attend, his sons, Paul and Mark Rutter, were present, along with Dr. Susan Wilson, who helped catalogue the collection. Other attendees included Bob Walbridge, current chairman of the City of Winchester Trust, Sarah Lewin, Information and Archives Manager at the Records Office, and Adam Jones, who photographed the entire collection. One of the sons said, "I hope that people will enjoy seeing them as much as I enjoyed doing." Andrew Rutter said, he wasn't there. The collection has been commended by Sir Donald Insull, who contributed a foreword to the catalogue. Sir Donald said, "This is a unique and remarkable collection of drawings of a historic city recorded at one point in its passage through time." The eyes of Andrew Rutter, now alas dimmed, have observed all this with care and understanding, and his remarkable graphic skills now bring them to us to enjoy, and with clarity, charm, and a beguiling accuracy. Mr. Rutter's drawings are supported by an extensive digital catalogue, Winchester Tradition and Change, compiled by his son Mark and Dr. Wilson. The catalogue includes stories from Mr. Rutter's tenure as Winchester's first conservation officer from 1974 to 1998, drawn from 18 recorded conversations and secondary sources related to the development of Winchester. The project was greatly aided by the City of Winchester funding for photographing and printing A3 copies of a large number of the drawings. Organised thematically and by location, the catalogue also features a selection of Mark Rutter's unique panoramic photographs, presenting an inspiring father and son take on Winchester's rich heritage. The catalogue can be seen as a sequel to Mr. Rutter's 2009 book, Winchester, Heart of a City, a rare out-of-print gem. Both the original drawings and the catalogue will be available to view at the Hampshire Record Office. It is hoped these unique resources will be seen as a rich repository for generations to come. And last year, I enrolled Andrew as a listener of this Winchester Talking newspaper.
Vision of city as capital of wine. A vision of Winchester as the wine capital of England was set out at a cabinet meeting. County Council leader Martin Todd was addressing the council's new tourism strategy and said vineyards and winemaking would be a key part. Councillor Todd said, "I would like Winchester to be the Reims of the champagne or English sparkling wine world, for Winchester to be the wine capital of England. That is something Vineyards of Hampshire want, and a personal priority as well. At 500 hectares of vines, Winchester District is the fifth largest producer in the country. With climate change, more land is likely to be turned over to vineyards, with the soil almost exactly the same as in the Champagne region of France." Councillor Lucille Thompson, Cabinet Member for Business and Culture, said the district welcomed 8 million visitors a year, spending an estimated £292.2 million and supporting 5,760 jobs. The Cabinet agreed a new tourism strategy from 2026 to 2031. It sets out a refreshed vision for the district as a high-quality, sustainable and inclusive destination. It builds on detailed visitor research and business engagement carried out during 2025. The strategy focuses on growing the visitor economy in a way that benefits residents as well as visitors, with strong emphasis on Heritage Plus, using Winchester's historic assets as a springboard for food and drink, countryside and cultural experiences across the wider district. It identifies four main strands of action: sharpening Winchester's destination marketing, targeting priority customer segments such as young professionals and higher spending short break visitors, improving the overall visitor experience through product development and better wayfinding, and strengthening collaboration via the Visit Winchester team and the new Hampshire, Portsmouth and Southampton Local Visitor Economy Partnership. Councillor Kelsey Learney, Cabinet Member for the Climate and Nature Emergency, said, "Boosting tourism also benefits local people. Having tourists boost things for locals, there is a better range of shops and restaurants."
Answers demanded following sewage spill. Councillors are demanding answers and action after a sewage spill caused pollution in a nearby watercourse. The incident, which occurred near Bishopstoke Lane on March the 4th, saw sewage enter Bow Lake Stream following a burst rising main south of the Southern Water Pumping Station. Bow Lake Stream feeds into the River Itchen, one of the region's internationally important chalk streams. Councillor Liam Bailey-Morgan of Winchester City Council said, "Our chalk streams and local waterways are among the most precious natural assets in our region, and they must be properly protected. I have asked the Environment Agency to make clear what action it will take to hold Southern Water to account for this incident and to ensure that any failures are addressed. Residents deserve transparency and confidence that our water infrastructure is being managed responsibly." Southern Water said it arrived on site later that day, shut off the pipe and diverted sewage by tanker while repairs were carried out over the weekend. It remains unclear how long sewage had been leaking before the pipe was isolated. A spokesperson for the company said, "We have repaired two bursts on the sewer in Bishopstoke Lane. The first, around 15 metres from the watercourse, was fixed over the weekend, and during follow-up work, a second burst was identified nearby and also repaired. Our teams acted quickly to minimise any environmental impact. Tankering began within 2 hours to divert flows away, and hay bales were used to contain the spill to land and protect the watercourse. We are now assessing the condition of the sewers in this area to identify any further work required to help prevent issues like this in the future." Councillor Louise Parker-Jones of Hampshire County Council said, "There has been a history of works and operational issues at this pumping station over the past year, and it's important that we understand whether this latest spill is connected with those earlier problems. With waterways crossing local authorities' boundaries, it's vital that councils work together to ensure the infrastructure serving our communities is reliable and properly maintained. They are seeking a full explanation of the incident, including how long the spill lasted and what steps will be taken to prevent a recurrence."
River pollution again, but from a different angle. In fact, from the Angling Trust angle, pollution is getting worse in Hampshire's River Test and River Itchen, according to campaigners with the Angling Trust's Water Quality Monitoring Network. Monitoring the River Test and River Itchen, they have warned of nitrate pollution they describe as endemic and worsening. In the Test and Itchen, average nitrate levels exceeded ecologically safe limits of 5 parts per million in every single month of the third year of monitoring. The report draws on more than 12,000 samples collected nationally over 3 years and points to ongoing environmental harm driven by nutrient pollution. A high proportion of phosphate tests from rivers breach the good ecological standards. The Yangding Trust claims rivers are being suffocated by cocktails of sewage discharges and agricultural runoff, and is calling on ministers, regulators and Southern Water to treat test anichin as emergency priority. They sum it up as saying the tap is open from sewage, agriculture and road runoff. We know the scale of the crisis and we must work together on solutions. And Alex Farker from the Angling Trust says, ecosystems have spent thousands of years finding their balance, but just a few decades of mismanagement and profiteering at the expense of the environment and the disastrous impacts are clear to see. There's a lovely photograph of a river urchin and then of Will Millard, adventurer and Angling Trust ambassador, holding a huge fish. I should think it's at about 3 feet in length, and I don't know what it is. Rod, pole, poach or pike, I don't know.
Salmon?
Is that a salmon?
Could be.
It could be a salmon.
But yeah. It's certainly a big
it's
fish.
It's enormous.
It's a big one, whatever it is. Thank you, Daphne. Over to you.
Right, now Nick read an item on rural crime, so here's another one. Hare coursers abandon dogs and flee the scene. Hampshire Constabulary's Country Watch Rural Crime Task Force, with support from Neighbourhoods Policing, responded to recent reports of hare coursing in the evening on February the 27th. The first was in the Preston-Candover area, where the team was assisted by officers from Basingstoke and air support from the NPAS helicopter. The suspected coursers fled the area on police arrival, leaving behind a dog, which was subsequently seized by police. The second incident that night occurred near Odium, where it was suspected that individuals were trespassing on land to course, but had already left once police arrived. Another report of coursing in Bentley came in the early hours of the following morning, February the 28th. The suspects left a lurcher-type dog abandoned at the location, which was subsequently taken to a vet. Police have been following up inquiries on this. Later in the afternoon, police attending land at East Worldham after concerns were raised around coursing the area, but no offences were confirmed, and the landowner had asked some individuals with dogs to leave the area, which they did. A spokesperson for Hampshire Constabulary said, "If you see abandoned vehicles on farmland or suspicious people with vehicles or dogs, please report this to police. Officers will continue to patrol the vast rural spaces of the county, respond to any calls for service that come in, seize dogs and vehicles linked to poachers, and conduct proactive stops of any suspicious individuals or vehicles in the countryside. We encourage people impacted by rural crime, including coursing and poaching, to report incidents to us as they happen on 999. If you have information about suspicious activity, you can submit this to us by calling 101.
Backing for programme to help victims of abuse. Female entrepreneurs have rallied behind a new wellness project to support survivors of domestic abuse. At this month's Maven Mixer, held on March the 13th, members of the Winchester-based co-working space Maven heard from Susanna Edwards, director of the School of Creative Wellness, about the Afterglow Assembly. The Assembly is an intensive 3-week recovery programme developed with Trinity Women's Services Winchester, launching this summer for women who have experienced domestic abuse. Natalie Hamer, founder of Maven, said, "Maven is a community at heart, and we love to support and spread the love for each other's projects, particularly charity-centred work. To date, Ms. Edwards has raised £1,100 of the £2,000 needed to fund the programme's first cohort. The School of Creative Wellness has invited Winchester businesses to help close the shortfall."
Hundreds join Emerald Event. A joyous and colourful parade through Winchester saw hundreds together come together, hundreds come together to anticipate St. Patrick's Day on Saturday, March the 14th. It's actually on the 17th. Hundreds of residents and visitors from further afield also attended. This is Winchester's first St. Patrick's Day parade, which began at Abbey Gardens and made its way through the city, finishing in the Upper High Street at O'Neill's. The occasion saw live music performed by the Batala Portsmouth Samba Band, very Irish, as well as poetry readings and songs performing using traditional Uilleann pipes. Many passers-by joined in along the way. At the end of the parade, attendees watched the Six Nations rugby match between Ireland and Scotland with a pint or so of Guinness from O'Neill's. Brian Walsh, organiser of the parade and founder of Erin Go Winchester, said, "I'm absolutely thrilled to see so many people here, including the mayor and mayoress. It's a privilege to have brought the first St. Patrick's Day parade to Winchester, and with all this talk, we might have to do one next year. The weather is perfect too. You know you're Irish when you get sunburnt at St. Patrick's Day." A Winchester Red resident said, "I've lived in Winchester for years, but I'm half Irish. It's tradition and it's great to get people who feel the heart and soul of Ireland to stand together and celebrate their love of their home turf. Ireland has been oppressed for hundreds of years, so St. Patrick's Day is about people being proud of their blood, family, where they've come from. Oppressed nations stand together, and what better time than now? It's a fantastic day." Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Sudhakar Ashwal, said, "We are proud to be part of a day like today. It's a fantastic celebration, and also the first St. Patrick's Day parade in Winchester. Events like this are very special for our community." Welcoming an impressive turnout, Brian and everyone involved in the organising the special parade is considering making it an annual event. Anne McIver said, another Winchester Red resident and Irish, "We're just having a great day. It helps that the sun is shining, and it's great to see so many people here enjoying themselves. I hope this is the start of many more."
Science Centre slashes its carbon emissions. A science centre has cut its Scope 1 carbon emissions by 98%. Wonder Seekers, the charity behind Winchester Science Centre, achieved a dramatic reduction in Scope 1 emissions following the installation of a new air source heat pump system, the biggest infrastructure upgrade in the building's 25-year history. Ben Ward, Chief Executive at Wonder Seekers, said, "This is a huge moment for us as we make sustainable changes in our business. We've swapped a 20,000-litre oil tank for clean, future-facing technology and cut our Scope 1 emissions by 98% in the process. That's not a small tweak, that's a giant leap. We spend our days inspiring children to care about science and the planet. It's only right that our own building reflects those values. This investment gives us a warmer, greener and far more resilient home for the next generation of curious minds." Located on the edge of the South Downs National Park, the centre combines interactive science exhibits with planetarium shows and community programmes, attracting more than 100 visitors annually, including over 40,000 school children. The centre previously relied on oil burners, installed in 2002, which consumed as much as 1,000 litres of oil per week during colder months. With the help of a £500,000 green asset finance package from Lloyds, the charity installed 5 air source heat pumps, replacing the oil-fired boilers while retaining the existing radiator network. The oil tank has been removed, leaving a single diesel outreach van as the charity's only remaining direct emission source. Ashley Botham, relationship manager at Lloyds, said, "Upgrading to air source heat pumps is a significant step for any organisation, particularly for a busy public venue like Winchester Science Centre. The team recognised that moving away from oil wasn't just the right environmental decision, it was essential for the charity's long-term resilience. Cutting direct emissions by 98% is a fantastic achievement and a real milestone for Wonder Seekers. Wonder Seekers plans to build on its progress by exploring the installation of solar panels to further move the centre towards net zero. A very sensible decision, I think, considering the current situation."
Chef into TV semi-final. Luke Ellis, head chef at the Wickham Arms, has stormed his way into the semi-finals of the BBC's cooking competition, MasterChef The Professionals. Luke impressed with a series of dishes demonstrating his technical skill and creativity under pressure. Luke, head chef at the Fuller's Pub for 6 years, said, "I'm very proud and happy that I'm part of the final eight. I don't want to stop there though. My expectations for myself keep getting higher." His first plate in the round, a delicate pea custard tart, wowed the critics' table of 30 diners. Judge Monica Galletti said, "It's wonderful."
Rare butterfly spotted across Hampshire. A butterfly long thought extinct in the United Kingdom could be making a surprise comeback, including in Hampshire. The large tortoise shell has been spotted at several sites in Hampshire and across southern England in recent weeks, raising hope of its return as a resident species. Sightings have also been recorded in Kent, Sussex, Dorset, Cornwall and the Isle of Wight. Professor Richard Fox, head of science at Butterfly Conservation, has said, "This is great news about a beautiful and charismatic butterfly. If the individuals that are being seen can survive and reproduce, then there's no downside to the large tortoiseshell coming back, and we can look at what we might be able to do to help it. The large tortoiseshell Nymphalis polychorus is a big, colourful butterfly with orange, black and blue wings. It is closely related to the small tortoiseshell, but has different markings. Once widespread across England and Wales, the butterfly was last recorded as a resident breeding species in the UK in the 1980s. Its decline has been largely attributed to Dutch elm disease, which devastated elm trees, the primary host plant for its larvae. Although rare sightings have occurred since its extinction, they are becoming increasingly common. Butterfly Conservation says that if it were to update its official endangered species list tomorrow, it would probably class the large tortoiseshell as no longer extinct." Mr. Fox said, "I would imagine that if things carry on with this trajectory, then when we compile our next red list, we not classify the large tortoiseshell as regionally extinct. The first reported sighting this year was on the Isle of Wight on February the 24th.
Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. When you've finished with the recording, please put the memory stick back into the wallet, place the correct address label on the front, and return it as soon as possible. Thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. And, of course, many thanks to our readers, Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
And Paul Newman.
Goodbye.
And from me, Barbara Kearns, thank you for listening. And until the next time, goodbye and have a great week.